22nd. That's quite hard to say that. 22nd. I'll start that again.
You're getting carried away, Derek.
I'm getting carried away. I'm just so excited, that's why. Only 22 we switch off momentarily. I can't even say that.
And the stadium erupts in red, white and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Let's go.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the next episode of the iReady podcast. As ever, I'm your host Derek, and with me is my co-host Dave. How are you doing, Dave?
Evening, Derek. Yes, I'm very well, mate. How's yourself?
Amazing. You know, Dave, before we get into anything, we knew when we win the title next, it was going to be immense, but this is beyond our imaginations, and we've not even won it yet, is it? It's fucking
Derek,
glorious.
I honestly don't think anybody would have known. I mean, Dave King did say that they would fold like a deck of cards, but I don't even think he would have known how much of a meltdown that their whole club and support and everything connected to them would crumble so quickly, so fast. It has just been absolutely glorious, and I think it's been great just to sit back and really just have an absolute belly full of laughs, isn't it? It has been hilarious, the whole thing, and just something that we all, as Rangers fans out there, should all be soaking up, because we have been through hell, and this really is, it's like a comeuppance, Derek, isn't it? It has just been absolutely glorious.
I mean, I talk about football quite a bit in my work, because me and a Celtic fan, who's one of the decent ones, fair enough, but, you know, I talk about football all the time, and folk are fed up at me, and I turned around to them the other day and said, well, just be happy with the way I am just now, because see, when we do win the league, I'm going to be fucking insufferable.
I think we all have, Derek. And do you want to know something? For all the for everybody that's listening out there, don't let anybody think that you're going overboard. Don't let anybody talk you into thinking that you're going overboard, because we do deserve all this after everything that we've been through. The ridicule, the piss taking, the constant putting down of the club, the punishments, you know, officially. It's just glorious at the moment, and I, Derek, I'm just absolutely reveling in it. I really am.
Yes, well, the league's certainly not over yet.
But
it's looking good, and we've even got a disappointing result to talk about tonight. Yep. But do you know what, Dave? I don't even care. I don't even care.
Oh, well.
Yeah, so we've got a draw against Motherwell to talk about, but before that, we've got the win against Aberdeen. So without further ado, we'll go down the tunnel and onto the pitch. So, as I said, the first game we've got to cover was on Sunday the 10th of January. It was away to Aberdeen in the Premiership, and we won 2-1. Only one change from the game against Celtic: McGregor, Tavernier, Goldson, Balogun, Barisic, Davis, Kamara, Aribo, Hadji, Kent and Morelos. On the subs bench, we had McLaughlin, Bassey, Hellander, Defoe, Itten, Zungu, Patterson, Barker and Stewart. So, a brief summary of the first half. It was a very open game in the first 10 minutes, both teams starting with a lot of pace, both teams starting brightly. Then it went a bit scrappy for the next 15, and the turning point was on the 25th minute when we got a penalty and they got a red card. But we'll get into that. Only 22 seconds into the game, it was a long high ball up from the right by Tavernier at the halfway line. Bounces once at the edge of the box. The defender fluffs it. Morelos nips in with a first-time shot, but it was a poor effort. Third minute, was a long ball knocked up to Cosgrove. Our defence hesitated. Cosgrove got it in the box and has a shot, but slices it wide. Seventh minute, Kamara picks up a loose ball. A lovely backheel flick to Hadji, who drove it forward and hits a powerful shot, which was dipping, but it went just over the bar. And then fast forward to the 23rd minute, it was a good worked ball from the centre to the left, crossed in but knocked away, but only to Kent in the middle of the box, who was completely unmarked. He switches feet, he hits a shot to the right-hand side, cleared off the line, bounces back out to Tavernier, who hits a shot and forces the keeper into a good save and put it out for the corner. It was the best chance of the game for either team up until that point. However, 2 minutes later, those three words you love to hear, penalty to Rangers, and also a red card to Aberdeen. The ball to Morelos in the box on the left, clear and on goal. He was about to shoot, Morelos was clipped from behind. I initially said in the post-match I didn't think it was malicious and he appeared to cut behind Morelos, but it was clear on the replay when I watched it back, he drag his hand over Morelos and try and pull him backwards.
Yeah.
And as he was going across him, he did clip him. It was a clear goal-scoring opportunity, so a clear penalty, and given the fact that there was no attempt to play for the ball either, he had to go as well. Red card. So,
yeah,
delighted.
I didn't see there was any problems with that at all, Derek. He was about to pull the trigger, wasn't he, when he was going through. There's got absolutely no doubts in my mind that he was going to get shot away in goal. And then, as you say, when you see it back, you did see there was a pull there as well when he went down. So, clear as day. But then, as you're about to get into something that we've not been used to seeing, have we?
No. 27th minute, Tavernier missed a penalty. Shock horror, sack him now.
Aye, Craig McCrimmon, where are you now?
He tries to place it in the bottom right corner. He sent the keeper the wrong way, but he put it the wrong side of the post. It's kind of unforgivable. You must really hit the target. I initially thought it was a good penalty, but at the same time, you've got to hit the target with penalties.
Yeah, you and Tom Miller, Derek, Tom Miller thought it was a goal as well, just with the way it hit, and then it hit the back of the net as well. It's one of these things, we can't say too much, but just very unlike Tav not to at least get the shot on target, as you said, Derek. So disappointing for him. Really can't slag the guy off. Every single player has missed a penalty at some point. I don't know if there's any stats there or not, Derek. Is that the first one he's missed all season? I'm not sure, but if it is, then it can only be one or two. He's usually very critical. Thankfully, though, it didn't matter at the end of the day, but at the time, we were reeling, but at the same time, Aberdeen were down to 10 men, so we had a feeling that we were going to have the bulky possession after that and hopefully get a few more chances.
Yeah. 30th minute, there's a free kick from Tavernier on the left at a tight angle. Tavernier tries for goal at the near post, but comfortable from the keeper. And 2 minutes later, Morelos put us 1-0 up. An absolute stunning goal. Tavernier on the right, feigns a cross, cuts inside, gets to the box, squares it to Kent in the middle, passes to Morelos just inside the box on the left. Morelos had his back to goal. He picks up the ball, turns, and a beautiful strike into the right of the net. A brilliant goal.
It was, Derek. The whole move, the forward play by Tav, he completely sold. Was it Johnny Hayes that was trying to mark him? I think he left him for dead. You were expecting Tav to go down the outside. He didn't. He skipped in past him as if he wasn't there. And as you say, the awareness, the ball to Kent, who I initially thought would get the shot away, but that wee depth touch from Kent to find Morelos to give him space. The touch by Kent, sublime, and as you say, back to the Alfredo Morelos that we all know. It was a brilliant first touch, turn, shot, goal. It was a tremendous finish and just a brilliant move all round, and thoroughly deserved at that point, Derek, because we were by far, you know, the better team in the game at that point.
Absolutely. 36 minute, we got a corner from a clear handball on the edge of the box. The cross was from Barisic on the left. Ferguson had his arm clearly out and it hits off it for the corner. I don't think it was meant at all, but it doesn't really matter. It changed the direction of the ball and it was not in a natural position as well. No yellow card given, no foul given. Did the previous red card influence that decision? I certainly think it did.
The damn biomechanics, Derek, that's all it is.
And then 4 minutes later, on the 40th minute, an absolute shocker on Barisic by Curtis Mayne. A high boot, a yellow card was given, but for me, it was a red card all day long. Again, I feel that the previous red card decision had a massive say on what the referee done there.
Yep, definitely, Derek. We were all screaming for it, you know, and sensed that it wasn't given. Really, quite a shocker. Absolutely, you know, terrible decision, because we were just all just screaming for it as soon as it happened, and I still honestly don't know why it wasn't given to this day.
No. That rounded out the half anyway, so got to be fairly happy with that. We were by far the better team. As I said, it was an open game for the first 10 minutes, but then once the red card came, it was really all us. We were just not putting the keeper under enough pressure.
It was, Derek. In the first half, though, even before the sending off, I think there was that one chance for Cosgrove at the start of the game. But after that, we really did have all the possession at that stage. We weren't maybe creating a lot of chances, but we were certainly by the better team. Aberdeen weren't putting us under much pressure either. And as you say, the red card just added to that. They had to go out and defend after that to try and stop us, for scoring more goals. So I was fairly content at half time.
Into the second half, 47th minute, Kent with a shot wide of the right post. And then we virtually sealed the game on the 50th minute with Morelos getting his brace and making it 2-0. Not only that, it was his 50th league goal for us as well.
Absolutely brilliant. Yep, superb.
Yep. It was patient play ending in Tavernier in the middle, outside the box. Plays it wide to Aribo, who shimmies into the box with the ball. He plays a pass to Kent, who has a brilliant touch behind to Morelos, who takes one touch to make space for himself, and his second touch hits a great shot into the back of net. This is the deadly Morelos of old, wasn't it?
Yep, it was, Derek. And again, going back, we've been talking about things about Morelos. He's an instinctive striker, isn't he? When he's, sometimes when he's got too much time to think about something, that's when he fluffs it. But this wasn't, because the move was so fast, wasn't it? Great play by Aribo, and then again, Kent again, the provider. And all Morelos had was thinking about was, I'm getting a shot in here. So he just had this very quick touch and then bang, into the net. It was a tremendous goal. And again, just repeating what you said, that's Alfredo Morelos. That's the guy that we know. That's Alfredo Morelos the last season. So, and I think collectively as a Rangers support, we were all, we were delighted we scored. But I think the fact that he'd got the two as well, just delighted for him as well to get our goal scorer back. So yeah, and I was looking at that point, Derek, that we were on easy street at that point, because we were just all over them at that stage in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't disagree with that at all. 52nd minute, Kent on the right cuts inside on the edge of the box and hits a great shot and a great save by the keeper to put out for the corner. That was more of the Kent we like to see. Direct, go forward rather than just, passing sideways or passing backwards. 56th minute, Aberdeen's best chance of the game so far. We switch off momentarily and allow Hayes to get on the edge of the box and have a shot off and a great save from McGregor. So just a wee reminder that we can't switch off. 62nd minute, a lot of pressure ending in Aribo having a shot on the edge of the box on the right, hit off the studs of the jumping defender and into the arms of the keeper. And then we completely switched off on the 67th minute because Aberdeen pulled a goal back to make it 2-1. Absolutely out of nothing as well. It was a long ball down the right, cuts inside to the edge of the box to the attacker, who was in acres of space. The centre-backs were nowhere to be seen. The attacker slots the ball past McGregor. It was so simple, out of nothing, and the two players went for the same ball and left who ended up being the actual goal scorer completely free and unmarked.
It's unlike us, Derek. It's uncharacteristic to be on top so much. And it was just a lack of concentration. Tav was, a way up field, got caught, and there was nobody covering for him. And usually when we've got the likes of Jack or Arfield or even Kamara, there's usually somebody to tuck in and cover that space, for anything like that. I think, though, with the likes of Aribo, and I'll get to Aribo playing a very high, Steve Davis and Kamara were in there, and Steve Davis was really, is more of a sort of attacking role as well, and we're used to seeing him just sort of being the sort of calm and influence in the middle of the park, but he was really going for it. So we were left at the back. Aberdeen knew that. I think that's what the sort of game plan had been all along, was to try and keep Tav up so there would be spaces at the back. And unfortunately, that one lapse of concentration led them to have quite an easy goal. And really, we were panicking. I know I was at that point, because I thought to myself, this game isn't going our way. We've missed the penalty, even though they've had a man sent off, and now they've just scored. And it was just going to be like Aberdeen to do absolutely nothing in a whole game and get some sort of breakaway or a fluke or something like that. So it was leaving us with feeling very uneasy going into the last part of the game, wasn't it? But as you're about to get into, we really had no need to panic at that point.
No, which is strange. I think it's trauma from previous times, isn't it?
It is, aye. And we spoke about that, I think, on the last pod as well, Derek. I think as a support, we're all tempted to jump straight onto Twitter when things aren't going well and it's just all doom and gloom. And when you actually look at what the team's done this season, we shouldn't be doing that. We should be having confidence that the team's going to either ride the storm or we're going to go on and score more. And it's just, as you say, I think it is just trauma for years gone past that we're all worried, because I was terrified at that point that Aberdeen were going to get one at the end. But I'll let you get into the rest of the game, Derek, because, you know, we really should have just been a lot more relaxed than we were, eh?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think they had a lot more possession than they were, and we were sitting back, but they never really done anything with it. And no. 81st minute was a long ball, beats the offside trap, Kent collects the ball, gets into the box, there was a defender on his right, but could have easily shot, and he decides to pass to the centre to absolutely nobody. Just Kent, once again, his confidence letting him down. He's got the ability to take on players and do things himself, but he just seems to want to make the easy pass all of a sudden.
Yeah.
82nd minute, Hadji came off, Zungu on, and the last piece of play I've got here, it was on the 86th minute, lots of build-up from left to right, then back again, ending in Kamara in the box on the left, gets close to the goal and hits a shot, blocked by the keeper at the near post, and then cleared for the corner. So really, despite Aberdeen having probably more of the possession, we had the better chances as well. Yes. They had nothing. So as you said, we were fearful for absolutely no reason, because, and it's not been the first time, it probably won't be the last time until we've got the league wrapped up this year.
No, it will be, Derek. You know, we can't help it, can we? Looking back on the game, when you look back, you say to yourself, why was I so concerned there? Because we really weren't in any danger at all. But as I say, I think it's just in our makeup, isn't it?
Yep. So, got to be happy with that. 2-1, a vital result for us, as they all are. It's one thing that annoys me on Twitter, is people are saying, this is a must-win game, this is really need to win this. Well, every game's like that, so there's no point really saying
it. I know. I think as well, Derek, we had been saying that we had a run of 5 games, with this Aberdeen game being the 5th game, and I think that every single supporter out there was kind of saying, try not to look too far ahead, but the next 5 games were going to be ones where in the past we could have struggled, and if we were to get maximum points for that, it would be absolutely sensational. And we did, Derek. We got maximum points. You know, it's an absolutely fantastic run that we've went on. We went to some very difficult grounds where, I don't care what anybody says, when we go, these teams really do treat it like a cup final, Aberdeen being one of those clubs. So you go up to Pittodrie, get a victory up there as well, keep ourselves undefeated, and then, as I say, maximum points for the last 5 league games. Absolutely sensational. We couldn't have asked for any better, Derek.
No, absolutely not. Well, that leads us into the next game, which was Sunday the 17th of January. It was away to Motherwell in the Premiership, where we drew. But I don't care.
You did at the time, Derek.
Well, yeah, but not too much the way it's worked out. It was an unchanged side from what beat Aberdeen 7 days previously, so I can't think of many times that's been able to happen this year. We've always had a glut of games. You know, we've been playing Thursday, Sunday for a number of weeks, and this is the first run all season where we've not had a 2 games a week. So.
Yeah.
Yep. Maybe affected the players that no having a run of games there. But we know the starting lineup. On the subs bench, we had McLaughlin, Bassey, Hellander, Defoe, Itten, Zungu, Patterson, Barker, and Stewart. It was a bright initial few minutes from both teams, played at pace, played with a high tempo and fairly open. Then it became scrappy. Then we turned off at the back. We had plenty of possession, but we were slow and lethargic with it. The final ball was absolutely atrocious. Morelos was doing well using his strength in the first half, but the front line were not linking well with the midfield once again. In the 4th minute, Motherwell pick up a loose ball. A shot from distance was going wide, but comes over from McGregor. 5th minute, a free header from Motherwell after a free kick floated into the box was miles offside, which was not given, but it was comfortable for McGregor. 7th minute, nice piece of play with Hadji playing a reverse ball to Barisic on the right. Floats a lovely ball into the back post. Morelos nods it into the path of Kamara, who takes a touch. The defender gets in the road and Kamara bundles it out for a goal kick. It was a really nice move, though.
Yeah.
And then makes a change, not being the 6th minute, but in the 20th minute, we went 1-0 down with Motherwell scoring. It was a throw-in from the right side near the halfway line by Motherwell, worked to the left side, passed about, nobody putting a challenge in. The ball was crossed across the goal from the left-hand side. The Motherwell attacker slid in and then put the ball into the back of the net. A really, really disappointing goal all round to lose. And we've not lost many this season. It's only the 7th in the league we've lost, but they all seem to be very similar, where it's the players being scared to put a challenge in, backing off, and simple balls that are outdoing us.
It was, Derek, and am I right in saying, and again, you can correct me if I'm wrong, was the move and the goal not very similar to the goal that Motherwell scored against us at Ibrox, you know, where it got played basically right across the face of the goal and the guy sort of slid in at the back post? I'm maybe getting mixed up, but as soon as I seen them score, I thought that's almost identical to the one that they scored against us at Ibrox. But it's just, as you say, it was poor defending, and it's just that wee momentary, you know, switch off. And we're just that used to seeing our defenders, especially our central defenders, being so switched on and stuffing things out. And just sort of strange for us, you know, for that to happen. But I tried to stay positive, Derek. Back then, I was thinking back to the Aberdeen game there, and I thought, you know, I am confident that we can get something out of this. I was looking at the bench, I was looking at the players that we had, and I thought, if it's not going to work, then, you know, we'll see how it goes. But surely they'll come out and they'll try and put Motherwell under a bit of pressure. And I was just fully expecting Motherwell to do again what they did at Ibrox and put 10 men behind the ball after that for getting the goal. But we were finding it difficult. But again, I was just trying to stay positive. I really was.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of what they did do in the, after they scored the goal, and, you know, fair play to them, they get the goal and they sit back, and that's all they have to do. You know, it's really up to us to break it down after that. Certainly it wasn't a 5-5-0 formation they played all game in the last game, but they did put every man behind the ball and they made it really difficult for us, and it really caused us problems. 25th minute, ball worked in from the edge of the Motherwell box, wide to the left, across in by Barisic at the touchline. Morelos gets his head to it and shaves off the outside of the right post. Unlucky there, and that's really how that. And then really nothing else happened in the half for that. It was a midfield slog with us having plenty of possession, but we couldn't do anything with it because we couldn't break Motherwell down, and it was just really too static and really disappointing from the team.
Yeah, it was. And just, you know, our out ball, because, I mean, to be fair, Hadji had been playing well up until that game. We were expecting somebody to basically take the, you know, the ball and go. The same way Aribo, Derek Aribo's just not been the same player that he was before either. These guys that used to sort of demand the ball and go forward with it, try to find passes, get past the men, it's just not happening for them at the moment, unfortunately. And that's when we are looking for our fullbacks to become involved. That's when we're looking for Tav and Barisic to get on the ball, to start putting balls into the box, get down the wing. But as you say, it was we kind of got sucked into Motherwell's game, didn't we? And it was really scrappy and just couldn't get anything going at all. But again, I was saying to myself, we've got enough quality here in the second half to go and score and get something for this game. I did try to stay confident at that point, but as you say, it was very scrappy, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Into the second half, though, expecting a lot better.
Yep.
52nd minute, Kent out on the left, drops the shoulder, cuts inside, a shot from 20 yards that was across the ground, but right at the keeper and fairly comfortable for him. On the 54th minute, Hadji off and hitting on. It was a disappointing substitution because he was, as you said, he was playing well up until that point. He was being fairly creative, but he was on a yellow card, I believe, and kind of made sense by the way the referee was going in this game. Certainly, though, hitting came on and he was brilliant, and he's shown what he can do, and we know from previous times against them he's been a thorn in the Motherwell side, and we're going to get into it that he was certainly that.
Definitely.
56th minute, Barisic with a header from the left, Tavernier with a head, then Tavernier with a header, and it was cleared off the line by Motherwell. The ball was still not cleared after that, ending in a shot, but it was well over the bar by Aribo. 71st minute, a good ball into the box from Barisic, cleared but only to Goldson at the edge of the box. Poor first touch but controls it and hits a blistering shot just inside the box, forcing the keeper to palm it for a corner. Really unlucky that. However, We pulled the goal back on the 62nd minute with Itton scoring. The corner from the previous move was initially cleared, but we picked it up and on the left. A lovely cross to the back post to find the head of Itton into the bottom right corner. Great goal.
It was, Derek, it was a great goal. And like I just said there, it was the first time really that we had seen anything from the fullbacks, and this time it was Barisic. And that was the difference, Derek. Barisic getting up and putting in a quality ball into the box. It was all about the delivery there and a fantastic header by Itton, you know, to put us back in the game. And I honestly thought that we were going to go out and we were going to win the game after that, Derek, because Motherwell had shown nothing in the second half. They were defending. And I thought, you know, surely it's going to be, lightning's going to strike twice and we're going to do it again because our fullbacks were getting further forward. And that was the key to us getting back in. I know I said it already. It wasn't working for Aribo. Aribo had a poor game by his standards. It wasn't working for Ryan Kent. It hadn't been working for Alfredo Morelos either up front, and it was down to our fullbacks to try and get back in the game, and that's what it came down to. It was a tremendous ball in by Barisic, it really was, and you know, I think we were well deserving getting equaliser at that point.
Yep, absolutely. And obviously there was some calls for the fact that they're claiming it was offside. Looking back at it, I would have said, see if we had VAR, it would have flagged it offside. However, when you've got a bunch of pundits saying it was offside, you've got a bunch of pundits saying it wasn't offside, that it was so quick, and for the naked eye, you've got to give the advantage to the attacker in that case. So it was a clear goal. I think if it was offside, it was a big toe and that was about it. But we know down south, VAR's been given that. So
yes, no, I know.
But we all know VAR is getting used completely in the wrong way down south. So we'll save that for another day. 82nd minute, Morelos off and Defoe on. This is something I said in the post-match, and I think several other people have said the same thing. Defoe should have been on maybe about 20 minutes beforehand, because he's the type of player that can just pick up the loose ball, that can get something from nothing and turn chicken shit into chicken salad, you know, to coin a phrase from Stone Cold Steve Austin.
There was a few times round about the 70th minute leading up, Derek, that the ball just fell in the box and there was nobody there just to put the ball in. And I'm sure I was texting you from about the 65th minute to say, we need to get Defoe on. This is the type of game. He's the guy that we need in the centre. They were marking Alfredo Morelos really heavily, so it wasn't working for him, Derek. But now we had Itton on, they had another threat up there. So they had, you know, an aerial challenge in the box to deal with as well, the Motherwell defenders, and he'd have been the perfect boy. I would personally, and you know, I'm not a manager, Derek, but I would have thought at that stage, as soon as we scored, bring Defoe on there to get the winner. But as you say, it just seemed to take an age and an age before he brought him on.
Yeah. 87th minute, Kent off and Barker on. 92nd minute, a cross in from the right by Tavernier, a lovely takedown by Defoe to control it, and with his second touch, he had a shot, but it was right at the keeper. But that's the type of thing that we're on about. He can just produce something from absolutely nothing at a tight angle, and it was his actual touch initially to actually bring the ball down was incredible, and it was almost like a control and turn at the same time to do it. But that's how the game rounded out. Obviously disappointed. Celtic had dropped points the day before, I believe, as well. They were playing Livingston. So disappointed, but it meant honours even. And some of the comments were a wee bit OTT again. Not as bad as they were before when we drew against Livingston, mind you. But we're not going to go through a whole season without dropping any points. We've only dropped 6 points all season so far. We've been on an incredible run. Yes, we would have been absolutely disappointed and going mad if Celtic had been closer, but they're not, and that's the difference. You've got a wee bit of breathing room. And the fact that they drew their game the day before, it gave us that wee bit extra wiggle room. Yeah, it would have been great to go an extra 2 points ahead, but we've got that wee wiggle room if we need it. So got to be happy with that so far. It's another game down, and we've kept the same points difference. So
exactly. I think, Derek, as well, I think a lot of our younger fans out there on Twitter are needing to calm down a wee bit. I'm hoping that you know they're listening just now. A lot of them haven't seen Rangers win a league title or were really young and can't remember much about the last time that we won anything. This is a league title. There's very, very, very few clubs go through a league season undefeated, and we are still in that position, which is quite remarkable. If you look at any other league in the world, regardless who it is, there's very, very, very few times you're going to get a team will go right the way through a league season without dropping points. It is going to happen. Hopefully it doesn't happen to us this season, but we need to put in a wee bit of perspective, Derek. If you'd have said to any Rangers fan out there that we would have been so far ahead of Celtic coming to the end of January, we would have bitten your hand off. And, you know, and to say that we were still, you know, we'd top the... I mean, I think we keep forgetting about what we've done in Europe as well this season, Derek. It's quite phenomenal what's happened. And as I say, that last game, we had a few players that really were off for them, and we still didn't get beat. So, I mean, that shows you how far the team has come collectively. It shows you how much... that the players have got, the manager and the players all around about them. It's fantastic, Derek. And even, as I say, 1-1 draw away at Motherwell, the fact that we were getting beat and we brought it back and we're still undefeated, you know, you've got to give them credit for that as well, Derek. So anybody out there that was, you know, ultra disappointed and thinks that we should be winning every single game, just, you know, try a wee bit of perspective here. You know, we're playing absolutely brilliant now. We're on a great run. So just enjoy it.
Absolutely. So we've played 24, won 21, drawn 3 games, lost 0, scored 60, only conceded 7, goal difference plus 53, and we've got 66 points. We're 20 points ahead of Celtic. They've only got 2 games in hand now after they drew again against Livingston. We're a guaranteed 14 points ahead of them now, which is phenomenal, and we'll get into bits and pieces about what their manager said later on. But as you said, it's just something that's incredible happening this season, both in the league and in Europe. If we lose the next game, will we lose the next game? It's one of these things where, yeah, disappointed, but we've got so much of a cushion now.
Yeah.
You've got to, as I said, you know, before the Motherwell game, if we win the Motherwell game, you know, 55 is definitely coming. And I think we all had to put ourselves in a bit of a check there. It's more difficult as the games keep rolling on, and if we keep winning, for Celtic to claw it back. And you would like to think it's too much of an order for them to claw it back. We're probably going to drop points. We're probably going to drop more points. Absolutely. If it happens, we deal with it. There's no way Celtic are basically, it's now over 4 games. I think you're talking about we need to lose 5 games. So. Yeah. Take the 2 Old Firm games into that as well. We lose the 2 Old Firm games, we still need to lose another 3 games. Celtic still need to win every single game.
And I think that's a big thing, Derek. They really are an absolute shambles at the moment. And they are so low in confidence, their players, that there's no way that I could see them winning every single one of their games left in the season. And even the most ardent Celtic supporter out there, you know, would have to agree, because, you know, they are. They're in an absolute shambles defensively at the moment, that I think nearly any team they play are fancying scoring against them. So, no, I'm not overly worried, Derek, but I'm not going to make any bold predictions. I have been trying to say we take one game at a time. Now I am looking at it as, you know, every victory is making it, you know, the title come closer and closer. So that's the way I'm trying to look at it. Our next game that you're going to get into here, we take that, we go to win that game, and then that's one less game that we've got to worry about. And, you know, the way that they're going, I wouldn't be surprised if they drop points again, which could open the gap even further.
Yeah. So the next game is on Saturday the 23rd of January at home to Ross County in the Premiership. That's a 3 o'clock kickoff. Yep. Then it's Wednesday the 27th of January away to Hibs. That'll be a big game on the Premiership. They seem to raise their game against us, however they did draw against Celtic last week.
So it must be shite.
That's a 7:45 kickoff. We were meant to have a game on Saturday the 30th of January at home to Cove Rangers in the Scottish Cup, however, which we'll get into, that's been postponed by the powers that be. So I don't know when that's going to get played. Then it's Wednesday, the 3rd of February, at home to St Johnson in the Premiership. That's another quarter to eight kickoff. Rather bizarrely, Celtic have still got two games in hand, but they're not playing this Saturday or Sunday. So I don't know what the deal is with that. Obviously, there's going to be a gap with the Scottish Cup games now as well. So I don't know what's happening there, and we'll just need to wait and see what happens. They should be forced to play the games, as simple as that. They caused a lot of issues for themselves and the league in a time when there's apparently only, there was at the start of the season, there was only apparently one free weekend or one free slot to play games. Now we're going to have a postponed Scottish Cup. So, and we'll just need to wait and see.
Yes.
So, we'll now go into the classic match.
And there it is! The final whistle's gone! Rangers have won the European Cup Winners' Cup!
Dave, what classic match have you got for us this episode?
Derek, I've got a game that I was privileged enough to be at, which took place almost 13 years ago in 2008. And it was the season, Derek, the season that should have been the season that we were absolutely sensational, but ultimately we ended up no winning the league. It was the season that we were on for the quadruple, which one of my favourite seasons of all time, despite us not winning the league, Derek. It was the season that we got, you know, to the Europa League final, or the UEFA Cup final, I should say, playing in the Champions League and then playing in this. And this was a game from the UEFA Cup. It was a last 16 match against a team who were sitting second in the Bundesliga and were also top goal scorers in the Bundesliga at that point, and that is Werder Bremen, a very, very tough team. And when we were drawn against them, there were not many people, you know, had the expectations that we were going to go through. I knew it was going to be a really difficult match for us, especially quite, you know, just in the last 16 there. But we'll go over the Rangers team that day. The ever youthful Benjamin Button of the team, Alan McGregor, was in goals for us. Walter Smith going out with a very sort of, I'll say, a defensive-minded team. But when I get into the game and show you the chances that we had, they really didn't play like that. But it was Kurt Broadfoot at right back, Carlos Queller and David Weir in the centre, and Sasa Papac at left back. Into midfield, he had these two sitting midfielders in him, Danny and Daly. He then had Barry Ferguson, Steve Davis and Charlie Adam, with Daniel Kuzan as the lone striker up front. On the bench of Rangers was Alexander, Kevin Thompson, Chris Boyd, Nacho Novo, Chris Burke and Stephen Whittaker, and Lee McCulloch on the bench. The Werder Bremen team, Weiss, Fritz, Mertesacker, Naldo, Brazilian internationalist, passing in Brauman, Diego, another Brazilian, Jensen, Swedish internationalist, Rosen, and the young German striker Hunt as well. So, like I said, Derek, going into this game, they were second in the league in Germany. They were top goal scorers, a phenomenal team. But Rangers put them to the sword at Ibrox this night. So, started off an early chance, Broadfoot with a long ball up to Ferguson on the edge of the box. Ferguson got ahead, but it was headed out by the defender, but it landed at the feet of Charlie Adam just outside the box, and he hit this quite sensational volley at the goal, swerve, and the Bremen keeper managed to get a hand to it, save it and cleared it. It was just the technique and everything by Charlie Adam, absolutely sensational. Werder Bremen were going for the sort of high ball a lot, though. They were aiming for Mertesacker, who's a, you know, giant of a man, you know, really big. They were trying to put a lot of high balls into the box, and they had the bulk of the possession at this stage, but Rangers were snuffing out their attack, thankfully. But then a chance for Rangers, and Daniel Kuzan, he wins the ball on the halfway line. He puts it out to Charlie Adam, and he shoots for miles and miles out, and it was just over the bar. It would have been sensational. But again, Adam really did look in the mood at that point. Then another long shot for Barry Ferguson, who's played through just outside the box. He hits his shot well over. And then a chance for Bremen as Jensen escapes, cut Broadfoot into the Rangers' right, swings in across the Hunt in a powerful header, leaning back by Davy Weir, but he manages to get a header and a clearance just away, or it was going to be a sure goal. So great defending by Weir there. And then on the 40th minute, a great chance for Werder Bremen. Rosenberg races through, hits a shot right into the top left-hand corner. It was going to break the back of the net, but an absolutely sensational save by Alan McGregor keeps the score at 0-0. Then closing into the end of the first half, Rangers had a free kick on the right-hand side of the box. It was fired in by Charlie Adam. Takes a slight deflection and then a fantastic save by the Bremen keeper to keep it 0-0. Like I say, in the last sort of 5 minutes of the first half, Charlie Adam hits a free kick from well outside the box, just over the bar again. And then a corner from Werder Bremen. A free header by Hunt, but thankfully he heads the ball straight into the arms of Alan McGregor, living dangerously then. But then Rangers, right in the stroke of half-time, break the deadlock.
The earlier one, absolutely no chance, but having given so many, the players expect him to do all the time. Cousin goes for it, the goalkeeper stops it! He had a hurler against Juventus in the Champions League! He has a hurler in the UEFA Cup against Rangers! Speculative for Daniel Cousin, and Tim Fieser allows the ball to squirt past him. Rangers have the lead in the most bizarre fashion. I mean, it's a good strike from Daniel Cousin, but straight down the throat of the goalkeeper. Absolutely simple save to make. The ball's moving, and he misses it, and he's no chance to get back. From there, Daniel Cousin, I think, it's worth a goal, but that is dreadful goalkeeping. And just before half-time, exactly what Rangers needed.
Daniel Cousin, he wins the ball on the left wing. He's miles and miles out, but he cuts in, still miles out, had absolutely no right to hit a shot, but just looks up, sees the keeper kind of off his line and just hits it as hard as he can. Speculative shot. It goes right above the keeper. He jumps up, palms, goes, I think, I'm not sure if he was caught in no man's land or whatever. I think he tried to get the ball over the bar, but it was too far out. He palms the ball up into the air. He falls backwards, the ball falls back and ends up into the back of the net. The goalkeeper made an absolute hash hit, but the noise inside Ibrox was absolutely incredible. And that, the referee blew the half-time whistle, straight after it. So a fantastic time for Rangers to score. So they came out into the second half, and they went on the attack straight away. And we only had 3 minutes to wait till Rangers doubled their advantage. Ball was picked up in midfield, played out to Steve Davis, who feeds the ball to Daniel Cousin on the right-hand side of the box. He runs in at the corner of the box. He hits a low shot across the goal. The goalkeeper dives down to save it. Again, I don't know what the hell he was doing. He spills the ball. Steve Davis had kept running in, and he slides and bundles the ball into the back of the net. Fantastic, great time to score for Rangers, and again Ibrox, the noise in the place was just absolutely sensational. But Rangers didn't just sit back then. You look at the team that Walter Smith put out and you thought this is a real defensive minded team. It certainly wasn't, because we had another chance for Steve Davis again on the 60th minute, a cross in from Ferguson on the left wing, and Davis heads over. He was really, really close in, really unlucky, should have maybe done a bit better with that. Rangers really winning everything in midfield. We were frustrating Werder Bremen every time that they got the ball. Fantastic. I think it was Christian Daly. He was absolutely sensational in this game, playing in midfield for Rangers. But then the ball played up into the Werder Bremen half, and Charlie Adam, basically at walking pace, he had a swagger about him in this game, Adam. He was excellent, and he was doing it at walking pace, and he was surrounded by Werder Bremen players, and he just kept it, and he just had a wee glance and a quick twist in the waist and flicks the ball to the left to Barry Ferguson. I don't know how the hell he saw him, because Ferguson was behind him, but Ferguson comes running and he hits a fantastic shot for the edge of the box, takes a slight deflection and just past the post, millimetres past, really unlucky there. Charlie Adams, sensational. And then another chance for Barry Ferguson, no look pass through two defenders by Adam again, just looking to Barry Ferguson, running in the byline. He has a shot, keeper saves it, hits off Ferguson again, and unfortunately goes out for a goal kick. But again, Rangers, like the supporters gone mental. But then that was the last bit of the game for Daniel Kuzan. He was off. And Lee McCulloch, who, when we think back about Lee McCulloch, Derek, we think him as being a defender or a central midfielder. But Lee McCulloch, I think, played every position for Rangers, especially going back, you know, that long ago. And he was more of a sort of attacking player. He came on as a striker for Kuzan. I think we're wanting that sort of big physical threat up front. And then he had an absolutely sensational chance not long after that, a high ball that was played up right down the middle, and it was misjudged by the defender. McCulloch went in with him. It ended up at the feet of McCulloch. The ball goes underneath the goalkeeper. McCulloch gets back up and he just goes to try and take control, just to tap it into the empty net. And Naldo, the big giant Brazilian, gets a tackling from behind. You know, it could have been a penalty, Derek. There was contact there, but it was a fantastic tackle as well. So a bit 50-50. He managed to get the ball away, but really really should have been 3-0 up there. But then Naldo, again, the same player, really should have had a second yellow card not long after that. An actual clear knee into the back of Barry Ferguson. Wasn't even a booking, which is quite shocking because he would have been off at that stage. And then the last chance of the game was another great save by Alan McGregor. It was a long shot by Jensen, which McGregor managed to get a fingertip to out for the corner, which never came to anything. And Rangers saw the game out, Derek, and they won that game 2-0. Never conceded any goals. That was the sort of Walter's golden rule for playing in Europe, especially that season. As long as we don't concede any goals at home, you could take a 0-0 at home, he'd have been quite happy. But Rangers managed to get the two goals, and then you know, that saw us go through. We played the away leg in Bremen, and Alan McGregor had probably one of the greatest nights and goals that any Rangers keeper had, because we were under siege in the away leg, and we managed to get out of that being beaten 1-0 and progress through, and you know, in Europe. So it was a fantastic European performance, a great victory against a top side, and as I say, the noise in Ibrox that night was just absolutely sensational. So again, you get the chance to go back and watch it, please do. I thought the standouts for Rangers that night was our midfield of Adam Ferguson and Christian Daly. They all had absolutely brilliant games. So go back and watch it if you can.
Who says we went through that European campaign just getting away goals and penalty wins, eh? Yeah, I think that's what's forgotten about, is because, yeah, we did play quite defensively, but we played to our strengths, but we got the results, and we you know, we never conceded goals when we needed to, which was the main thing. So. Yep. Yeah, it was just an incredible season, and you know, you never know what's round the corner this season, do you? But that's maybe been a wee bit fanciful thinking there.
Yep, exactly. Well, yep. We'll keep believing, as Marvin said.
Yes. So Dave will be back next episode with another classic match, hopefully the one that I've been badgering him to do for the last few weeks now.
Which I still can't find, by the way. You'll have to send me the link, I think.
I'll try and get it. Yeah. So, we'll go now into the news. So, I'm fully aware that this is a Rangers podcast, and as much as we don't like to talk about Celtic, we really need to, don't we?
If it's for comedy element, though, Derek, I feel that we must.
Well, it all relates to, it comes back to us, because whatever happens to them kind of does have an impact on us as well. So I feel as if it's pertinent to do it, Dave.
Right, okay.
So obviously we were talking about Celtic and their Dubai trip last week and how they were getting heat from it after pictures emerged. Well, they returned. And upon returning from Dubai and taking tests for COVID, Julian tested positive, resulting in 13 players and 3 staff members, including Neil Lennon himself, having to self-isolate. We all fucking told them this would happen, didn't we?
Yes, I know we did, Derek. And first of all, I know there is Celtic fans that listen to this pod, so I'm not going to go on. We don't wish anybody to get COVID. We don't wish any player to become ill or anything like that. But as you say, Derek, this was on the cards. They all got warned about going. I don't care what anybody said. There was the most ridiculous decision that I've heard in a long, long time. And as you're about to get into, Derek, the whole defending it and the whole we done nothing wrong is quite sensational to me, and I still can't quite get over it, as I'm sure you're about to get into.
No. Well, the Hibs game was then put in doubt because there was humming and hawing about how many players had to self-isolate to begin with. Bearing in mind, the day before, the Scottish Government changed the corridor for Dubai and made sure that everybody coming back from Dubai had to self-isolate and take tests and all that kind of thing. So that was one thing. But Celtic, on that point, were actually covered because they were classed as elite sportsmen, so they wouldn't have needed to self-isolate. However, the positive test came through. So as I said, the Hibs game was put in doubt, and then it was confirmed that it was going to go ahead. Hibs asked Celtic to take further tests before the game,
which I think they were quite right to do, Derek. I mean, let's be honest. If it had been me as well, if it had been them playing Rangers, Derek, I think even from it being our own team, I would have said that's not really, you know, an unreasonable request.
No, absolutely not. They then asked the SPFL or SFA, I'm just lumping them in because they are one in the same useless body these days. They asked them to get Celtic to take the test. They also refused. They actually came out with a statement saying, or I think it came through Hibs, that they've been told they must play the game, otherwise there'll be severe consequences for them. So basically telling them, you play or you get docked points. So how ironic is that, that Celtic are having to self-isolate 13 first-team players, yet Hibs, under safety grounds, would refuse to play, yet they would probably get the points docked from them. How Scottish football is that? Hibs were unhappy, but they were content after further talks with the SPFL, SFA, that they had been given assurances that if any players affected with COVID due to this game, that their cup semi-final could be postponed. Absolutely fucking shocking from Hibs. Putting player safety second, absolutely. But anyway, Hibs and Celtic ended up drawing the game, and Celtic, quite surprisingly, still had a very strong squad. It was at least half their kind of what I would say is in their first team squad that was out there, wasn't it?
Yeah, and puzzling as well, Derek, and there still hasn't been a full explanation, but they were told that Shane Duffy had removed himself from the bubble early to fly back to the UK, and they actually said that he would have to self-isolate and he wouldn't be playing next match. They actually said that, Kennedy actually said that, but lo and behold, he was playing, and we really weren't given much an explanation as to how that came about. Don't get me wrong, Derek, there's one player that I love seeing playing for Celtic at the moment, it is Duffy, but you know, there's still not been anything really said about that or made or any real investigation as to how they can turn around and say that he was and then turn around and say, oh no, he doesn't have to, and that's it. Just very, very strange how that came about. Why feel the need to say that he's definitely not going to play in the next game because he was removed from the bubble and then he plays and, you know, there's nothing to be said. Very, very, very strange with the whole thing, Derek.
Apparently it's because he's taken a negative test. So, well, surely then, if that was the case, everybody should be surely taking another test, and if they're negative, they should be playing. So, as you said, not being explained fully, I think the SFA and the SPFL are making everything up as they go along here. After that, the SPFL then suspended Leagues 1 and 2 and below, as well as women's football and Scottish Cup football for 3 weeks, and stated that championship clubs must do weekly PCR testing. Ian Maxwell subsequently wrote to the championship clubs to see if they all wanted to suspend the league, something that Leagues 1 and 2 were not even asked about, it was just told to them. It was all a resounding no, so it was an up yours to the SFA in that one. All of this was clearly, for me anyway, to appease the Scottish Government due to the Celtic situation, which a couple of clubs have basically said that that was the case as well, that right, we're shutting down two leagues. They seem inconsequential because one club fucked up.
Definitely, Derek. I think we all thought that as soon as we heard it as well, and just glad that all the championship clubs did vote so that it was a resounding no, because it was, you know, it'd been an absolute farce if that had been the case.
Yep. Then Doncaster, his £400,000 Doncaster, was trotted out in a carefully selected media outlet, pre-prepared questions, and the headlines all said in the media that he refused to rule out null and void. If you actually read what he said, he didn't say that at all.
No, absolute nonsense. It was clickbait nonsense, Derek.
Yep. just to spin a narrative. Yep. There was also a scheduled Zoom meeting where clubs were asked to unmute their mics if they wanted to speak, but they were never allowed to unmute their mics.
Damn that old technical issues, Derek, eh? Damn.
Yeah, I mean, just... it descends into a farce after farce, and this is what annoys me. I think it was Stenhouse Muir that came out and broke that story, that really confirmed it, and they were one of the ones, apparently one of the 13 who did vote for an investigation. But this is where it comes to, it is like the likes of Hibs, the likes of any other club who now have got issues with the SPFL, well, it serves them right if they voted against an investigation, because they could have got a clean slate for this year, but they decided not to. So fuck them. I don't even care about their fans, because ultimately all of these clubs allowed their fans to dictate what happened to Rangers in 2012. So if you're not willing to let your fans dictate with you something now which benefits your own club, then hell mend you.
Yeah.
Celtic then drew against Livingston the same weekend we drew against Motherwell, so you know it was all going to cock for them as well, the fans. I mean, Dave and I, and I'm pretty sure every other Rangers fan, has been listening to Super Scoreboard non-stop because it's been hilarious. Peter Lywell came out with his non-apology, said sorry to Celtic fans, but nobody else. It was a number of days too late. He was then, I think he was only done it because he was backed into a corner, which is the only reason why he done it. He then went on to talk about how great Celtic were and how their foundation was great and how much money the foundation have raised, which is Celtic fans that pay into, not the club, and they'll come back and try harder in the league. And then... it was probably the most explosive media piece that we've seen in a number of years in Scottish football. It was just, it's everybody's seen it by now, but the Lennon rant was incredible, wasn't it, Dave?
It was. It was quite spectacular, Derek. It really was. I've watched it quite a few times, and I've seen I don't know how many mock-ups of him as well. I've also seen... something that I sent you as well, for the fans that are actually saying that the pictures and everything used by the media were actually doctored to make him look more sort of mad looking and insane, and again sort of using this sort of anti-Irish narrative, which I found absolutely incredible. The guy has lost it, Derek. Now don't get me wrong, Derek. There was a few things that he said that actually said to myself, oh, well, I really can't disagree with you there. He's rant about his rant, which I thought was funny that he used about the Scottish national team in the dressing room and the celebrations and all that. You know, it's actually technically correct what he said, but the way that he just lost it and he was using all these, it's as if he had a notebook and he was writing down a list of things that he could use, and he'd memorised them all because he'd just come out with, you know, one sort of thing after another, and they were getting more and more ridiculous every single time he went. And I was so shocked, Derek, that he wasn't relieved of his duties. And lo and behold, he's still in charge. It's quite incredible. He completely lost it. He went against everything that his chief executive had said in the previous statement. And I think even all the sort of hardened Celtic fans out there that think he could do no wrong were absolutely embarrassed by him, by everything that he did. He couldn't stop, and he couldn't stop himself. And it was just, for all us blue noses out there, and, you know, it was just absolutely glorious to see. And it really has made them a laughing stock, Derek. It really has.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm pretty sure everybody's seen and heard it by now, but there's a few things that I want to go over. I mean, it was 18 minutes of him going off on one really right from the start. There was no let-up. It was venomous. It was contradictory. It was petty. It was ranting. The Sky reporter initially was getting in the neck due to Andy Walker's comments, so he's having a go at a Sky reporter for another Sky reporter's comments. Absolutely daft. Lennon then stated he wouldn't speak to Sky until Andy Walker apologises. He then given Sky comments for the previous 5 minutes, and he still spoke to them after that. He claimed it was a witch hunt, there was bullying going on, but he didn't want to go further into that claim, which is, you know, quite surprising if there's bullying going on. That's here about it. He then claimed St Johnstone Hampton away dressing rooms and their provisions for away teams were breaching regulations for being too small, something that both the clubs have came out and publicly refuted and stated that Celtic and other clubs are allowed to see the areas before the game. There was no complaints before or since, which, you know, it just goes to say, and no other club have clearly had any issues with that at all. The joint response group have been on the back of this, have asked all clubs to review all the protocols, which is really poor because they're basically pandering to Celtic.
And like I said, Derek, he had a list, didn't he? He had a list of things that he was like saying, and it's as if he had it all prepared and written down, and he had it memorised, all these examples that he had to try and defend their absolutely shocking actions. You know, what had happened in Dubai, it's as if he had a list. And he just couldn't keep himself calm, could he? And he just, you know, as you say, some of the stuff he came away with was quite incredible.
I mean, the government got it in the neck, the governing bodies got it in the neck, all completely at odds, as you said, from what the Lywell statement about his non-apology. Lennon again apologised to the Celtic fans, but no one else. He then claimed that the distancing had changed on the plane from 2 metres to 3 metres. Well, this is a thing that nobody's really picked up on, and I put it on Twitter last night. So if he's saying that the players were self-isolating because the distancing had changed from 2 metres to 3 metres, then just as well it fucking has then. Because for Scottish football and for him and the rest of his team, they would have been absolutely decimated. The isolating player had tested positive. And we still don't know who officially that is, but I think it's either been Ncham or it's been Edouard.
Because
they weren't involved in the squad last night. But ultimately, what's came out is a player who was self-isolating from that trip tested positive. So that means it's been in his system and then he's tested positive. So if he wasn't self-isolating, he would have been mixing in and training with all the players. He would have been probably playing against Hibs as well. So he would have affected the whole of the Celtic squad and staff and the Hibs players and their families and their staff. So I don't know what his issue is there, because ultimately he could have got football shut down in this country if that had happened. So thankfully, if that has been the case, they've saved Celtic a lot of further embarrassment. And some of the quotes here is, I mean, there's too much to really cover in full. Everybody's heard it by now, but there's a few quotes here. And first one here is, "It's not as if we did the conga in the dressing room dancing to the Baccarat."
Which I thought was hilarious. So.
Well, what's even more ironic about that is what was pointed out in Heart and Hand. Some of his own players were involved in that conga.
Exactly. Yep, exactly. Uh-huh. Leading the line, I think, as well.
Another quote, "We've come back and been absolutely decimated by these rules. I'm not convinced they're a public health issue. It seems political in my opinion." Holy fuck. The whole world is going through a pandemic just now. People are dying right, left and centre, yet he doesn't think self-isolating is a public health issue.
Yeah, he's just went full Trump there, hasn't he? Let's be honest.
And the fact that he said he thinks it's political. So does he think it's political against Celtic?
I think
you'll find that this administration has been pretty fair on Celtic over the past 13 years. Next one here. This is if the last comment wasn't Trumpian, then this certainly was. Nobody has got COVID. So does he mean in general or in Celtic? Both are wrong, completely wrong. But what's he on about there? Next one. "Our protocols were perfect." Really? That's the reason why your players have got COVID and had to be self-isolating then, really? What is probably more incredible at this point, bearing in mind it was the start of January when he said it, the league may be beyond us.
Yes.
Where have you ever heard a manager say that in January? Never.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Next one. "We get the results later on back from the lateral flow test this morning. Everyone is negative." He was then interrupted shortly after to say that he had another one that tested positive.
Oh, dearie dear.
Next one. "For me, there was nothing wrong with the photographs. And by the way, it's illegal to take photographs in Dubai without someone's consent."
Is that?
I've read up on it and apparently it is. But who actually, see, unless you're actually worried about that, who actually knows that? Because that's not something that I would have looked up if I was travelling to Dubai.
Oh my God.
So he's clearly guilty about something there. And then the last one here, everyone is negative. The whole squad is negative, bar the two players.
Yeah. Yeah,
was... It goes on though. That's remarkable and totally blows out the water the way the trip has been portrayed in certain quarters of the media by certain pundits and by certain government officials as well. So,
it's comedy gold.
If he thinks that's remarkable, though, that only two players have caught it, was he expecting maybe, you know, 10 players to get it?
Oh, my God.
And bearing in mind, one last thing. So we've had two out of the whole 60 catch COVID. So it started off, we were told, with 30 players.
Yes.
Then it went
exactly.
to 40.
Yep.
So now it's 60 people from Celtic went to Dubai.
Yep. And that's in the same week that they have furloughed and got rid of a lot of their under-18 team. Derek, that they've paid for this trip to go as well. So if that's not a PR disaster again, on top of everything, I don't know what is.
I mean, here's the thing about furlough as well. You've just spent that. You've went at odds to what the Scottish Government, you know, have kind of advised. Now, bearing in mind, we went into that the last, about the ins and outs of who's agreed with it. But are Celtic furlough is obviously paying 80% of it. So I hope Celtic are picking up this other 20% then. And they're not letting these staff members, you know, go without 20% of their pay, considering, as you said, they've just spent $250,000 on this trip.
Yeah.
It really is incredible. But anyway, we'll move off from Celtic just now because we've had enough hilarity of them.
It's been quite incredible, Derek. It has been one sensational story to the next with them, and then one laughable story to the next, and then one outrageous story to the next. It's something that just keeps going and keeps going. Considering we spoke about it on the last pod, and we're still talking about it just now because there just seems to be something new every single day. And he's the type of guy who, every time it gets mentioned, he's just going to explode. The press now know this, Derek. The press know this. So of course they're going to keep asking him about it, aren't they? They're going to keep it because they know that they're going to get a reaction. And that's, again, how I'm just absolutely shocked that he's not been relieved of his duties by Celtic. Why that hasn't happened, I don't know. Again, the deluded support that they all have out there seem to think that they've got this world-class manager in the wings waiting just to come in and take over, like they did when he got given the job, you know, full-time the last time. They all had Benitez and they all had, you know, every manager under the sun. It's they're very deluded, but myself, I'm surprised that he is still in a job after everything that's happened, not just results and the way that they've went, but just the whole way that he's conducted himself and everything, all the decisions that have been made. I'm really shocked, which makes me think that there is something bigger in the wings that they maybe can't afford to get rid of him, because he's basically said today he's not going to leave. So is there maybe something bigger in the wings? I honestly don't know. There's maybe an even bigger shitstorm coming to them, and when that happens, Derek, if it does happen, I'll be sitting with my popcorn in my hand.
I'll be sitting with my jelly and ice cream.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think. The last thing I want to say about that is I think Celtic are in deep shit, and I think they know it. Because, as you said, if everything he's done, I mean, just take the results, you know, take the results out of the equation.
Just the results, Derek, yep.
Take that out of the equation, and now the whole Dubai thing, the way he's acted in his interview afterwards, in the press conference afterwards, he's went at odds against his boss, which is gross misconduct anyway you look at it. You know, it's not towing the party line. And I know me, you, everyone else, if you went against your boss at work, you'd be severely reprimanded, if not sacked, the next day. So he's not going to walk, because I think he's too proud to walk, but also as well, he's on a big contract apparently, so he's not going to walk because he would lose money. And Celtic can't sack him because I don't think they've got the money to pay him off.
I don't know as well, Derek, with the whole rant they had and speaking about all the other clubs in Scotland, speaking about the footballing authorities in Scotland, is that not classed as bringing the game into disrepute as well?
I would like to think so, but again, we're still waiting on the compliance officer, who is apparently leaving her post in the next week or two. You know, we're still looking to see what's happening with that, because it is incredible that once again they've got away with it. This is Celtic, who allegedly are bullied and they're getting picked on, and everyone's getting blown out of proportion. Bearing in mind, yesterday they scored their two goals from an offside goal. In a corner that should never have been, and they should have had a penalty against them and another man sent off. So Celtic like to live in their own bubble, and I wish they had just lived in their own bubble when it came to Dubai, but they live in their own bubble, who they think that they do no wrong and the whole world's against them. The fact that they allowed a silly fan in these paranoid ways to film a video in Celtic about referees are against them, they've got incredible. The biggest inferior complex ever, and long may it continue. But anyway, I want to move on from Celtic now, because, you know, we've talked about them too much, even though it is delayed, so. Certainly, it's not all been lost on Rangers fans as well, because we've been having a ball as well. Several fans have contacted and pay a celebrity to send a video into them. So we've had Barry from EastEnders do a couple of videos. We've had Dr. Carl Kennedy from Neighbours as well put fan-paid videos as well.
We've had Wagner.
Oh, they certainly don't have a clue what's going on, but it's hilarious to see what their reactions are, and it's been fantastic. You said Wagner as well, absolutely. Yeah. However, one really sick thing that happened with him, and fair play to him as well for coming out and slamming the guy, but he's had to apologise for an absolute sick fuck who got him to do a video mocking Fernando Rixon and the 66 fans who died at the Ibrox disaster. Wagner done the video in good faith, and he did not know the circumstances.
Yeah.
He came out and named and shamed the dick who done it, so absolutely good on him and his team behind that. Of course, the media tried to balance it up in the story that when they reported it, to say that Wagner had previously done a video saying that Lisbon Lions won't see 10 in a row. Well, nobody from Celtic, past or present, are going to be seeing 10 in a row, so it really doesn't matter, and it was a factual statement. So it's just typical media having to try and balance up a story there. Couple of signing bits of news here now is apparently where a pre-contract for Aberdeen's Scott Wright is very close, confirmed by both Gerrard and McInnes. I don't know much about him, Dave, but I think he would be more of a squad player than anything.
I don't know anything about him either, Derek. The way that I see it right now, though, is I think that we are needing to freshen up, especially in that position, in the sort of wide position. So there's been talk, certainly, that they're actually trying to get a deal to bring him in now as well. So if he's going to be, you know, if he's going to strengthen us up front, good, another good young sort of Scottish talent as well. So bring him in, let's see what he's like. If it's a pre-contract, it's not going to cost us any money to buy him. And who knows, there's been some talking, maybe Greg Stewart going, you know, a straight swap and us getting him just now. But like you, Derek, I honestly don't know much about the guy, but obviously Steven Gerrard and his backroom staff do, you know, that they want him. So, you know, we'll wait and see. But as I say, it's another good young Scottish player that we're bringing in.
Yeah, and I believe McInnes as well has kind of praised the way we've done things as well. So it's very strange that we've been very pally with Aberdeen in terms of signing players and we've all been above board. I don't like it. But
no, definitely not.
But, you know, if it benefits us in the long run, then fair enough. Next one here is Kai Kennedy has signed a contract extension eventually. Much protracted and talked about extension, Ross Wilson took aim at the team around Kennedy, saying that we felt Kai received questionable advice previously. So it wasn't he mincing his words there. And we said that kind of at the time when this was all rumbling on about him wanting more money or wanting away. And I think young players have got to realise, and they've been told, that there is a path there. You knuckle down, you play well, you're going to get your chance. And obviously difficult, especially at the start of the season when the team were playing so well and they were so settled. But, you know, he's only 18.
Yes.
And he's certainly a great prospect, and I'm glad he's staying. If he knuckles down, that's fantastic. And I think he's on loan just now to Inverness, I believe. So, you know, that's always good for us if we get a young talent extended.
Yep, absolutely brilliant.
Yep, Next one here. Three Rangers fans have been charged over the Old Firm game, two for fireworks and one for sectarian comments. Well, we did say this would happen. I don't care what the other mob do. Keep ourselves in check first, then we can moan about what Celtic do. Much like what the team are doing just now, focus on ourselves, worry about what the others are doing later.
Yeah, not exactly, Derek. Especially the season just now, we don't want any attention, any negative publicity to our club at all. I think them across the city are doing that perfectly at the moment. So everybody just keep behaving, enjoy what's going on, and I'm sure we'll enjoy you know the end of the season that's coming up. But just try and stay out of bother and do things properly.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, we're all going to get COVID fines, you know, when we celebrate 55. So. Next thing here is Rangers wrote, and I love the way this was put on the tweet, we wrote to Her Majesty's Government and the Scottish Government to offer Ibrox as a centre for COVID vaccination. Fantastic gesture. Not that the Scottish Government can organise a piss up in a brewery when it comes to COVID just now. Of course, Celtic had to come out with a statement later day claiming that they had offered Parkhead a month previously. Aye, right. And that's just the thing with Celtic over the last few seasons is everything to do with Celtic, their PR, their fans, is completely reactionary on what we're doing. They see us doing something and they just have to copy it. I mean, just look at their fans patter as well. We put Timplosion out, they say Hunplosion on the back. It's just pathetic. Everything they do is so pathetic. But no speaking about Celtic again.
No, it was a great gesture, Derek. If you look, I'm not sure what the requirements would be if, you know, you need to go in, if they need to put up, you know, marquees or specialist tents or porta cabins. We've certainly got a lot of space around about Ibrox with the car parking areas and stuff like that. So I don't know if that's maybe what they had offered, you know, to use for it. But certainly a great gesture and a sensible one as well. Whether or not it gets used, I honestly don't know what the reaction's been from then, but a great gesture regardless.
Yep. We've been back in court, apparently, with Sports Direct. Nothing to do with the current deal. It's all to do with the legacy deals it was known about. And from what I can gather, it's to do with the damages for alleged contract breach, especially when it was all at the time of the boycott of Sports Direct. So we'll wait and see what happens. I'm sure what I read is that the damages can be no more than £1 million. However, I'm sure that in the accounts as well, we'd made provisions for it being up to £3 million. And it's been reported in the media as a multi-million pound settlement case. So we'll need to wait and see what transpires there. I mean, you know, it's one of these things when fans are boycotting, how can you quantify how much would be getting bought? You can forecast, but it can never be fully accurate. So we'll wait and see what the judge decides there. Next thing here is both us and them have announced that we'll both have skins in the Fortnite game as well. 350 million active players, so fantastic exposure. Unfortunately, they are included in it as well, but great for our club nonetheless.
No, as I know how popular it is with younger folk, Derek. My son's just getting out of that stage over the last year, but I know it is it's huge, especially for sort of kids, sort of, you know, 13 and under. It's absolutely massive. And to see that, I actually saw someone had put something up in social media and I saw it the other day. I was like, well, that's absolutely fantastic. So as you say, the more publicity we're getting, the better. So it's excellent that it's going all over the world. So brilliant. Yep.
Last piece of main Rangers news I've got here is George Letham has been appointed to the footballing board, different from the PLC board, and joined Stuart Robertson, Ross Wilson, James Bisgrove, Andrew Dixon and James Blair. So that's good to see there.
Definitely, yes.
Yep. Next thing, former manager Pedro Caixinha has been sacked from his job at Saudi Arabian side Al Shabab after 5 months, 19 games, and winning only 8 of them. So,
oh dear.
He done well with his last club, even though he got sacked. Uh-huh. But
a bit of an enigma, Derek. I'll never slag the guy off. He was he was onto a hiding when he came to Rangers. He should never have been hired in the first place. Certainly wasn't the right fit to come in. But we're certainly not going to say anything bad about the guy, but as you say, I think that's the sort of league that he's maybe suited to playing out in the in the Middle East and things like that. But obviously, he's had a bit of a disaster, so no luck.
And the last piece of main news I've got to cover here, and I'm absolutely baffled by this, is the National reported that the Duff and Phelps two have been paid £21 million in compensation as part of the malicious prosecution case, with another £3 million paid to them in legal expenses. Utter
quite incredible.
Ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. I mean, somebody at the Crown Office and surely has got to get their arse felt for this one. It still baffles me how it's transpired like this, because if the police suspect something has happened, they've got the right to arrest you and investigate it. So I don't know how it's gone. It's obviously, you know, in the eyes of the law, somebody's fucked up somewhere. But the fact that they have been part of a group that's fucked us over, allegedly, before they start suing us for nothing, for them to get £21 million out of this is just absolutely incredible. I mean, they don't need to work again for the rest of life.
No, I mean,
I'm guessing that's what they've claimed is lost earnings and reputation, but I don't know what to say about that, because it makes me so angry that the truth about what happened to us will probably never be heard, and never be justice will never be served, to put it that way, on us. We might hear bits and pieces, but it'll be all hearsay rather than actual in court fact.
I really hope that's not the case, Derek. It's something I'm hoping that we'll find out one day, exactly everything that happened. We all know there was foul play at our club majorly that got us into all of that. As you say, it's getting buried deeper and deeper. I just hope some point that we actually find out exactly what went on. As soon as I saw that news as well, I couldn't quite believe it, that amount of money that was paid out, you know, to these guys. We all knew at the time that the whole situation just stank. And, you know, to find out that that's what's happened, it's quite sickening to all of us that just want to find out exactly, you know, the truth and everything that went on.
Yeah. So, Dorset Knob Throwing Festival cancelled.
Excellent, right?
The tradition of tossing knobs on a Dorset field has been cancelled due to fears that lice may be put at risk. Ian Gregory, the chair of the Dorset Knob Throwing Committee, said that it has been affected by COVID-19 restrictions. The event is rescheduled to return in May 2022. It incorporates a food festival, live music, and knob-based games such as knob and spoon racing, splat the knob, knob darts, and pin the knob on the Cern Abbas giant.
The what?
The Cern Abbas giant is a big giant written or drawn on the side of the hill.
Right.
Players also battle to eat as many knobs as possible in record time.
Derek, there's got to explain a bit more, I think.
The one-day festival attracted 8,000 revelers in 2019, and knob throwing has taken place there since 2008. Experienced and hardened contestants are seen tossing their knobs under arm while keeping one foot on the ground during each bash. Mr. Gregory said that the decision to cancel was reluctant. He said the essence of joy of throwing knobs was that it was great fun, and without the freedom to mix openly of the spontaneity and appeal of this event will be lost.
There's got to be an explanation, surely.
This is maybe our ignorance playing on part here, but apparently the Dorset Knob Throwing and Frome Valley Food Festival features a competition to hurl the county's traditional biscuits as far as possible. Knobs are biscuits, Dave.
Exactly. So it's more of a hobnob than anything else, Derek, yeah?
Exactly, yes.
Yes, okay. Just your dirty mind that made it sound as if it was something totally different.
It was you that was laughing, Dave. Dave, you sent me one as well, which you can't really see out loud just now because you're talking.
No, yes, exactly. I'll let you have the honours, Derek.
A woman almost bit off her husband's willy as he cooked sausages for tea while she gave him oral sex. In the heat of passion, he lost grip on the pan and spilt boiling oil down her back. She clenched her teeth on his willy, and in agony, he bashed her on the head with the pan. Both only admitted how they received their injuries after intense questioning by hospital docs in Merthyr Tydfil. The man needed treatment to his willy winky, and the wife had burns, two black eyes, and a broken cheekbone.
That is a belter. I've saved it on my phone and I've read it a few times. And it's not the act, it's everything else that I find even more hilarious. The fact that she had two black eyes and a broken cheekbone because they smacked her with a pan. Oh, absolutely brilliant. Oh, dearie dear, that is an absolute belter.
The iReady podcast does not condone wife beating at all.
Definitely not.
We also don't condone getting your willy bit off as well, but that's another story.
No, and we certainly don't condone acts like that while you're cooking sausages. So there you go. Oh, dear.
So, on that note, we will end the podcast. So, as ever, if you want to check out all our other podcasts and our match reactions, you can go to our website, which is iReadyPodcast.wordpress.com.
We just hope, Derek, that there's more hilarity to come from the other side of the city. I'm quite disappointed with myself because I vowed a couple of seasons ago never to listen to the Clyde phone-in ever again, but it has been absolutely compelling listening over the last few weeks. It really has, and it's not because of anything premeditated. It's just the fact that their fans are absolute lunatics, and it's hilarious some of the things that I've heard. And the one thing that I'm desperate to happen, Derek, on Twitter, is for the "we didn't start the fire" thing to start back up, because there is so much ammo that they could use and so much material that it could happen no problem. So the powers that be out there in Twitter land that started the "we didn't start the fire" for the banter years, please, there's going to be loads of stuff that we can do now, so to get it started up. I would really love to see that.
And just a wee shout out to the Just Us Tims podcast as well, because you've probably all seen it on Twitter. It's just fucking hilarious. They're a bunch of idiots. They really are.
I mean, you're da Selzavon. Did you see that one?
No, you're da Sazavon, is it not? You're da. I can't even say it myself.
It's you're just da Selzavon. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
But I mean, they're that stupid you think it's a parody, but they're just being genuine. I mean, apparently they want Rangers to do well in Europe because it helps the coalition.
Derek, didn't he do things like that because folk will start not listening to us anymore and start listening to him? Oh, it really does. It's this whole thing has just brought out so many absolute moon howlers. It's unbelievable, and it's given them all a platform, and it is just glorious. It really, really is glorious.
Yes. So, on that note, thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Take care, folks. We'll be back soon. Bye bye.
And the stadium erupts in red, white, and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Let's go.
You had the sales of one rumoured to be the new Celtic manager. I would like to know C31 who you had the sales of one is. Is that him? Who's to say it's not a bird? That could be, could be a bit of an eye on that one. I'd like to know what kind of pedigree that person has. So where's this rumour came from? Thanks for your comments, C31.